9.
It seems to me, Milani said, that we could settle the question for good by having Gideon look at the autopsy report. He was able to tell that the body in the plane was Torkel's. He might well be able to confirm that the body found at the fire was Magnus's. She smiled sweetly at him. Isn't that right, Gideon?
I don't think Gideon came to Hawaii to spend his time looking at bodies, Hedwig said before he could answer. He's gone more than enough out of his way to help us already. Let the man relax.
She turned to him with the self-complacent expression of a potentate about to bestow a precious gift.
Gideon, I have some space tomorrow afternoon. How would you like an oiled lotus leaf body wrap?
She threw a similarly magnanimous look at Julie.
You and your beautiful bride both.
Both of us in the same lotus leaf? Wouldn't that be a little uncomfortable? He said in a weak attempt at a joke.
Hedwig laughed, but it was obvious that it had gone right by her. She pressed on.
And if you wanted to stay overnight, we could do Lapa Au colon cleansers for the two of you. They're sensational. You've never felt anything like it. What do you say?
He managed not to flinch, but only barely. From the corner of his eye, he could see Julie, with a terror-stricken expression on her face, silently signaling him no.
Thank you very much, but...
No, don't thank me. It's just my way of thanking you for what you've done for us.
Without charge, no doubt, Inga said dryly. Hedwig speared her with a look.
Funny.
Inasmuch as Inga's facilities were overflowing with a group of happy would-be cowboys from an Indonesian businessmen's association, they were meeting on the wide, covered back porch of Axel's and Milani's house. From where they sat, they overlooked peeling red-painted stables and a split-rail enclosed corral in which three or four wiry paniolos, in from the range for the day, were leisurely unsaddling and grooming their horses. Beyond them, moist green hills rolled over one another to the horizon, with occasional small clumps of cattle, roaming black dots, visible here and there on the slopes. Other than Felix, who was still on the mainland, they were all there to hear Gideon's report from Maravovo, mostly sitting in a semicircle in old wicker armchairs, some white and some green, none of which had seen a fresh coat of paint in a decade. Dagmar, Hedwig, Keone, and Inga, sitting on the porch railing, swinging one booted foot, and Axel and Milani. Julie, who had been invited by both Milani and Axel to come, and who was curious, but who was a little reluctant about being one outsider too many, had moved her chair a few feet back from the others, so as to be out of the general flow of conversation. As he'd said he would, Felix had telephoned Inga the night before with the bizarre news about Torkel. Inga had informed the others, and for the last 20 minutes they had been tossing around the same questions that Gideon and John had already been through, and they had arrived at the same answers and non-answers. There was little new information to emerge, beyond confirmation that Dagmar had indeed received a telephone call, purportedly from Magnus, in which he'd said that Torkel had been killed, and that he had to leave for a while and was flying out in the Grumman, but would be back in touch soon. Which was pretty much what Felix had told them the previous evening. As to what exactly had been said during the telephone call, Dagmar was the only one who would have had direct knowledge, but the information about Torkel and or the reopening of these old wounds had very obviously taken a toll on her. Gideon had assumed that if anyone was going to contest the notion that it had actually been Torkel, not Magnus, on the telephone that night, it would have been Dagmar herself. But she accepted it with no more than a seemingly unconcerned shrug. Yes, it was possible. It was all so long ago that she barely remembered. And what exactly had he said? Another weary shrug. It was too long ago. It was all in the police report somewhere. What difference did it make now? Gideon had never seen anyone age more in 2 days. She was like a ghost of herself, passive, uncertain, and deeply, deeply depressed. Her cigarillo had gone out after a couple of minutes and had never been relit.
The feistiness, the agile wit, even the barbed petulance were completely gone. The foot bones from the plane were now in a covered shoebox beside Gideon's chair. Only Keone and Inga had shown any interest in seeing them. The others had shaken their heads and turned away.
"That's a really nice offer, Hedwig," Gideon said now. "But actually, I'd be happy to see what I could do about confirming Magnus's identity, only..." He hesitated.
"Only what?" Malani asked.
"I don't know how much I could come up with from the autopsy report. A pathologist looks for different things than I do. It'd be better, if you really want to go ahead with this, if we had the remains exhumed."
"But he was all burned up," Inga said. She had come straight from a Paniolo chuckwagon cookout with her Indonesians and was still in full Old West regalia, big red bandana around her neck, scarred, creaking leather chaps, and snakeskin boots with clinking spurs.
"I realize that," said Gideon, "but there's bound to be some skeletal material left. There might be something helpful."
"No, you're not following. There is no skeletal material. There's nothing."
"But I thought he was buried."
"So did I," John said, equally surprised. "Well, he is buried," Inga said, "but there's nothing but a little box of ashes. He was cremated."
"Cremated after he was burned?" John exclaimed. "They wanted to make sure he was really, really dead," Keone explained.
Inga glared at him. "It was in his will."
Keone shrugged. "A likely story."
The old Dagmar suddenly emerged.
"Damn your smart mouth," she snapped. "Why don't you be quiet until you have something worth saying?"
Keone, obviously used to this kind of treatment, grinned and raised his hands in surrender.
"Yes, O great queen."
Dagmar turned disgustedly away from him and slipped back into her depression.
"Okay, then," Gideon said. "The autopsy report would be the only route to go."
He looked around at them.
"But are you sure you want me to do this?"
Hedwig, Inga, and Axel looked uncertain. Keone shrugged again. Malani said yes, but then caught their hesitation.
"Well, I think so. We do, don't we? Auntie, what do you think?"
"What do I think?" Dagmar said to the porch roof. "I agree with Malani. Let it all come out. But what does it matter what I think? I'm an old lady. My day is done."
They waited for more, and after a deep sigh, she went on.
"What I think is, I'm tired to death of the whole thing. You people do what you want. I don't care. I shouldn't have bothered to come at all. I should have just..."
"Oh, the hell with it. Do what you want. I don't care."
Finally realizing her cigarillo was out, she fumbled for a match, but Axel was up in a flash to light it for her. Returning to his chair, he waited politely until he was sure she'd finished speaking. Then he put his glass of guava juice and soda down on the worn planks beside his chair and leaned forward, looking at the floor with his elbows on his knees and his hands clasped.
"I can't help wondering how much we really want to get into this again. That was a terrible time, and yes, it would be good to understand everything, but it's in the past. Everything is all settled now. Do we really want to stir it up again? Say they shot the wrong man, that is, if it's Magnus that was shot. Well, what difference does it make now? They're both dead. There's nothing we or anybody else can do about it anymore."
Hedwig and Inga were nodding their heads.
"That's so," Inga said. "The more I think about it, the more I think maybe it'd be better to just let them rest in peace. Drop the whole thing."
"Whoa now, folks. Let's just wait a minute," John said gently. "You don't really have a choice. Things are going to get stirred up whether you want them to or not. I know this isn't any of my business, but this is a homicide we're talking about. You can't let the cops go on thinking one man was murdered when it was really someone else."
"That's true," Gideon said. "Even though I went out to Maravovo at your request, I have an obligation to tell the police what I found, given what it was I found."
Are you saying we're going to have to bring the police into this again? Axel asked plaintively. More interviews, more depositions, all over again? We're still doing late spring roundups, for Christ's sake. Oh, Jesus, Inga said with a sigh. Now I am sorry we started the whole thing.
We can take care of telling the police about it for you, John said. They'll need to hear it from Doc anyway. Who handled the case? They didn't run it out of Waimea, did they?
No, Hedwig said. Some detective from Kona took it over. He was from the investigation division or something. Not a very nice man. Very unsimpatico.
That'd be the CIS, the criminal investigation section, John said. We'll go talk to them. I know a guy there.
Thank you, Inga said. We appreciate that.
But they're almost certainly going to want to follow up with you, Gideon told them. This raises a lot of questions. I'm sure you can see that. I wouldn't be surprised if they reopen the case.
Probably, but maybe not, John said. They just might want to bury the whole thing and forget about it, seeing as how they screwed up the first time. Cops are different from scientists, Doc. Sometimes the search for truth takes a back seat to covering their rear ends.
Gideon thought about that. Not so different, maybe.
Oh, bother, Hedwig muttered. What are we supposed to tell them? It was 10 years ago. Who remembers anymore?
I still don't see what difference it makes, Axel grumbled.
Axel, honestly, said Milani with a shake of her head. Of course it makes a difference. I don't understand you people. Don't you want to know what really happened?
Well, of course we want to know, Milani, Inga said. It's just... it seems so... I don't know, morbid.
To put it mildly, Axel said.
Dagmar brusquely spoke up.
Will they want to talk to me?
I'd sure think so, John told her. I'd be surprised if they didn't.
A frail hand went to her forehead. She looked physically sick, Gideon thought.
I've lived too long, she said vacantly. I'm too old to go through it again.
In the corral below them, a horse, freed from its saddle, had flopped to the ground and was scratching its back in the dirt, rolling, snuffling, raising clouds of dust. They watched one of the paniolos get it to its feet with no more than a couple of gentle clucks and a get-up motion with his arm. He was the oldest of the cowboys, a mahogany-colored Hawaiian who wore a flowered Hawaiian shirt and a 10-gallon hat with a dust-caked garland of flowers around the band. The other paniolos, younger, were in tank tops and baseball caps, most of them worn backwards.
The old guy, John said to Axel. That's Willie Acow, isn't it? He was foreman of my section back when I worked on the ranch.
That's Willie, Axel said. He's our ranch foreman now, 69 years old and still going strong. And the kid rubbing down the big gray? That's his grandson. I'm trying to keep it in the family, just like Torkel and Magnus did. Only we're not big enough. There aren't enough jobs for all of them. We only have 5 of them now.
I have 2 of our old-time paniolos at the Dude Ranch, too, Inga said. But we had to let the rest go. Sad.
I hired one to help out at Hui Ho'olana, Hedwig put in. Hogan Legelesa, but it didn't work out. For some reason, he just couldn't fit in.
Listen, folks, John said, as the conversation continued to stray. There's one other thing you probably want to be thinking about, because it might raise some trouble for you.
The wills, Keone said. Oh, boy.
That's right, I'm no expert and neither is Doc here. But we were thinking this might mean that since Torkel died after Magnus, we think, that Magnus's will isn't valid, never was valid.
And Torkel's will goes into effect instead, Hedwig exclaimed. After all this time, would they really do that?
Sheesh, Axel said, slumping in his chair. What a mess.
We don't know, John said. But if you want my advice, you better talk to a lawyer.
Felix is a lawyer, said Inga. What did he say?
It never came up. We didn't think of it until we were on the way here.
Gideon, more out of curiosity than anything else, was trying to figure out a way of asking what was in Torkel's will without seeming to pry, when John, with his customary directness, saved him the trouble.
So what did Torkel's will say? Does anybody know?
At which there was a lot of throat clearing and foot shuffling, until Inga reluctantly spoke up.
Well, sure, because his will had to go through probate before Magnus's could become effective. But we knew long before that, she said with a shake of her head.
At a somber party on his 70th birthday, it seemed, a melancholy Torkel, suffering from intimations of mortality, had announced that he had recently changed his will, and he felt it his duty to inform them of the new provisions so that they wouldn't be caught by surprise when the sad time came. Formerly, his will had been almost a carbon copy of Magnus's, but after much earnest thought, he had arrived at the conclusion that it was best for people to earn their own way in life, that large inheritances were morally corrupting. Thus, he no longer had it in mind to leave the ranch to his descendants, either in pieces, as Magnus had done, or as a whole. According to his new will, the nieces and nephews would each have gotten token lump-sum bequests of approximately $10,000. But the great mass of the estate, the Ho'aloha Ranch and its remaining assets, would have been placed in the hands of a charitable trust, the profits going to a home for indigent Swedish merchant seamen in Stockholm, with the exception that his sister Dagmar be generously provided for, even more generously than under Magnus's will, for the rest of her life. In other words, Gideon thought, if Magnus's will were to be invalidated now, and Torkel's will executed in its place, Hedwig, Inga, Axel, and Felix would lose everything. No wonder they were looking a little hangdog.
Well, now, wait a minute, Inga said. It may not be an issue at all. Gideon, let's say you look at the autopsy photos or whatever, and you're not able to say for sure whether it is or isn't Magnus.
Which is highly probable, Gideon said.
So, in that case, it wouldn't be proven that Magnus died before Torkel, or after him, or anything. Wouldn't that mean that Magnus's will would stand as it is? There'd be no concrete basis for going over to Torkel's will.
Beats me, Gideon said. That's way out of my line.
Well, I tell you, Keone said knowledgeably, I've had a little experience with wills, and the way I think it's going to play out is that it'll all depend on whether the Seaman's home wants to take us to court over it. They might not.
They'd have to hear about it first, Inga said grimly, then laughed to show she was joking. But the thing is, we're getting ahead of ourselves here. Felix gets back home tomorrow, doesn't he? We'll see what he says. In the meantime, let's see what Gideon turns up or doesn't turn up when he looks at the report.
Everyone appeared to agree with this. Gideon looked at his watch. It's 4:15, a little late to start with the police today. Let's wait till tomorrow. That seemed to end the discussion. People were getting to their feet when Gideon exclaimed, Oh, I almost forgot. The Ocean Quest people were going to drop off another box here. Did they ever do that? I mean, besides the foot bones.
Yes, they did, Axel said. We were out when they came, but they left them with Kilia, our housekeeper. It's on the kitchen counter. What is all that junk anyway?
When Gideon explained that it contained what might be Torkel's last effects, and the family showed interest, Milani went to get it. A minute later, she was back.
No, it's not there, she said to Axel. I wonder if she put it away somewhere when she cleaned up this morning. Probably. You know Kilia and her clean countertops. We can ask her when she comes in tomorrow.
As they broke up, John approached Keone.
So, Keone, how does a Howley show his racial tolerance?
Keone grinned at him.
Hee-hee, by dating a Canadian.
Gideon, Julie, and John had a quiet dinner, steak again, at the ranch house with Axel and Milani, during which, by mutual but unvoiced consent, no one talked about Torkel, Magnus, or the Wills. They did, however, briefly discuss Dagmar. "Is she all right?" John asked. "She looked like absolute hell."
"She sure did," Axel agreed.
"Well, we've been raking up some pretty painful memories, but she'll be all right. You know what a tough old bird she is." "She also went in for her annual lube and oil change this afternoon," Milani said, then laughed at the puzzled expressions on her guests' faces. "That's what she calls her annual physical at Kona Hospital. She stays overnight, and she's always worried before she goes in. You wouldn't think she was a hypochondriac, would you? But she is. But she always comes out with flying colors. She'll make it to 100, you'll see."
"Knock on wood,"
Axel said, and demonstrated on the tabletop. The rest of the dinner conversation was devoted to Axel's ranting about a letter to West Hawaii Today, in which a local environmental group had complained about pollution of the land due to cattle manure. "You should never, never confuse human waste with animal waste," he fumed. "Cattle manure is not your everyday, ordinary crap, and cow droppings are not cat droppings. Cattle manure is nothing more nor less than a dilute multinutrient fertilizer filled with micro and macronutrients that improve the soil. Nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. Not only that, it has physical advantages. It improves carbon exchange capacity, it increases water filtration, it does all kinds of beneficial things. Now, of course, I admit that the smell can sometimes be a little..."
"What charming subjects we talk about at dinner," Milani mused.
Julie laughed. "At my house, it's skeletons and exit wounds."
"It is," she thought about it.
"Well, all things considered, I think I'd rather eat at your house." That was the high point of the meal, and breakfast the next morning was much the same, with no talk of what was really on everyone's minds. But afterward, when Milani and Axel left to attend to ranch affairs, John, Gideon, and Julie went out onto the porch. Breakfast had been a heavy affair of sourdough pancakes, thick-sliced bacon, potatoes, fresh pineapple and mangoes, and pot after pot of thick coffee. And it felt good to stand out in the fresh morning air, looking out over the morning mist-cloaked hills, feeling the dew on their faces, and listening to the hollow, distant lowing of cattle they couldn't see.
"You know," Julie said, "I was just thinking that now there does seem to be another one of those loose ends you two were talking about."
"What's that?" Gideon asked.
"Nobody."
"Nobody?"
"No body," Julie said. "No Magnus. Presuming it is Magnus, he's just a pile of ashes in a little box."
"You know, that's true," John said reflectively. "No body, no trial, no perps, a misidentified victim. I have to admit, that's a lot of loose ends."
He looked at his watch.
"Well, time to see if we can tie up a few of them. Doc, ready to go talk to the Waimea PD?
Gideon hesitated.
"I guess."
John frowned. "What's the problem?"
"The problem is, I'm going to barge in on some detective's turf, totally unasked, a complete stranger, a self-proclaimed expert he's never heard of, and tell him he botched a case he handled 8 years ago, not even getting right who got killed. I've been here before, John, and I can imagine his reaction. I know how I'd feel."
"Hey, don't worry about it. In the FBI, we come up against that kind of situation all the time. There are techniques for diffusing it. See, the trick is you have to make them see you as helping them, not horning in. Besides, I used to work for Honolulu PD, remember? I know these people. I know how they think. Trust me, just follow my lead, we'll get along great."
"John, you have my implicit trust," Gideon said. "But if it was the Kona CIS that handled it, why are we going to the Waimea PD?"
"Because they would have been the first on the scene, and the ones who opened the case. And they're the local police force. It's a matter of professional courtesy, see what I mean? There's a right way to do this."
The Waimea Police Department was closed.
"Closed?"
John yelled through the glass front doors at the stern and preoccupied-looking woman on the other side. In response to their thumping on the glass, she had grudgingly emerged into the unlit vestibule from somewhere in back to bark at them. She couldn't let them in. The office was closed. In one corner of her mouth, a cigarette jiggled up and down as she spoke.
"How the hell can you be closed?" John shouted. "What, there's no crime in Waimea on Sunday?"
Her eyes narrowed. She took the cigarette out of her mouth. Her lips, thin to begin with, disappeared altogether.
"Do you have an emergency, sir?"
"No, we don't have—" "Are you in immediate need of the assistance of a police officer?" "No, damn it, but we need to talk to—"
"Office hours are Monday through Friday, 8 to 5.
"Look, lady,"
John yelled even louder, holding his identification up to the glass.
"I'm trying to be polite here. My name is Special Agent John Lau of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and I damn well want to talk—"
"Monday through Friday, 8 to 5.
She stuck the cigarette back in her mouth and went back out of sight around a corner. John was left steaming, holding his card case up to the deserted vestibule.
"Do you believe this?"
Gideon had been prudently silent throughout.
"Well now, John,"
he began as they walked back over the neatly trimmed lawns of the Civic Center toward the parking lot.
"That was certainly an instructive example of—"
John cut him off, jabbing the air with a warning finger.
"Don't say anything."
"Are you planning to tell me where we're going?" Gideon asked after they'd been driving a while. "At some point?"
"Where we should have gone in the first place,"
John muttered, his eyes fixed on the highway ahead.
"The Kona CIS. He set his jaw. "And they better be open.